well. This is the House Water Committee being called to order on this March 6, 2003. And we're going to, for the purposes of accommodating Mr. Huntington's schedule, move House Bill 2515 to the top of the order for today. And as far as the House Bill move 2515 to the top of our business for today to accommodate Jeff's schedule. So with that, would you give us the material on 2515? No, what do you got?
That's for later. That's true. Yes.
Pete? You want to tell us what 2515 is all about?
Okay. I just want to go get your list.
See, I didn't move it up yet.
Okay, all right.
House Bill 2515 directs Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board to provide funding for Watershed Improvement Operating Fund for positions in soil and water conservation districts. Specifies that persons employed in positions funded by board perform functions related to restoration and protection of native salmon populations, watersheds, fish and wildlife habitats, and water quality.
Okay. And at this point, could we have Jeff Huntington from OWEB, please? Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Jeff Huntington, the director of the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for accommodating schedule. So let me spend some time with the Board of Agriculture this morning, and I was excited to do that. I don't have much testimony to offer on this bill, except I wanted to make sure I was available in case there were questions regarding the funding source for it. Essentially, OWEB and my position on this in observing the infrastructure of local restoration groups and groups like soil and water conservation districts and watershed councils all around the state is that we know that to the extent that you have professional planning of local conservation organizations, we get better projects and we get more assistance to landowners and the whole voluntary restoration component of the Oregon plan works better. Now, having said that, House Bill 2515 directs to fund at least one soil and water conservation district position in each county using the Watershed Improvement Operating Fund, which is that operational portion of Measure 66 funds. The bill's pretty self-explanatory with respect to what the positions would do, but essentially provides an entitlement for about 36 positions across the state. We were asked to do a fiscal impact statement on the bill, working with Department of Agriculture and our fiscal folks. We looked at those staff positions at about an entry-level classification in the state classification system equivalent to the Natural Resource Series 3, which seemed to be about the level that's necessary to provide the technical work that would be expected under the bill. And the fiscal impact statement for this bill is about $4.9 million. The reason I wanted to spend a minute with you today in particular is to make very clear that the Watershed Improvement Operating Fund is fully appropriated under the current governor's recommended budget to continue past levels of support for positions, current positions in soil and water conservation districts, watershed councils, and for supportive technical positions in Oregon plan programs in many of the natural resource agencies. So one thing I wanted to leave you with is we at OWEB anyway do not have a portion of the Watershed Improvement Operating Fund monies that come to us under Measure 66 lottery funds in an aggregated pot of funds that we now use for grants. that funding of this bill, for the fiscal impact of this bill, could be reverted from a grant program into positions. Dollar for dollar, any positions or fiscal impact of this bill would come from eliminating current support to soil and water conservation districts, watershed councils, or state agency programs in order to fund the fiscal for this bill, at least according to the fund source that has been designated by the bill. Again, there's no question that when we have staffing of these local groups, we get better projects. We at OWEB have been trying to take this, the need for technical assistance, on in a way different than simply funding across the board positions, and rather have had special calls for technical assistance grants that would be aimed specifically to producing projects that are on the shelf that need design work or technical assistance for the landowner. But we can't grab hold of the full extent of the need out there, clearly. And I think the folks from the Healthy Streams Partnership, the Interim Conservation Incentives Working Group, and others all would come to you and say, if we can arrive at stable funding for professional staff positions for all local conservation organizations, that's a good thing. The question is the suitability of the fund source and what we sacrifice when we move the funds from current uses to the proposed use in this bill. So with that, I'll stand for any questions you have, and I'll be happy to offer any other information that the committee might need as it sorts through this question.
Thank you, Jeff. Is there any questions for Mr. Huntington?
Well, not necessarily a question, I guess the purpose of this bill is, like Jeff said, very self-explanatory. I guess that decision is a decision that would be made in Ways and Means as to if this would be a proper allocation of funds. The need is more than apparent for increased technical support at the field level, and the purpose of this was to give Senator Messerly and his sub this option if they chose to take it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mr. Chairman, I have one more thing that I didn't include that I did want to mention to you. At least we in OWEB, I want to point out there is a difference in the mechanism for funding, and there's two choices available to the state and to the Ways and Means process of this committee. One is to identify a number of positions that will be placed in specific spots around the state to accomplish an identified purpose. The other is to establish a pot or a segregated amount of money that is to be spent for the purpose of supporting technical assistance for specified purposes that is then distributed on a merit-based approach as opposed to a specific formula for a number of FTE. And there's, I believe, a significant policy difference and a choice there for Oregon as we decide to try to provide dollars to support technical assistance for local conservation organizations. And I would at least submit that from OWEB's perspective, there is a real difference between a merit-based approach to moving dollars where there's a demand and there's a capacity to deliver, and an approach that spreads the dollars according to a geographic plan that tries to lift the boat generally overall by establishing a set number of positions in set geographic areas. And I think that's a worthy discussion point.
I think that is a worthy discussion point, Jeff. And I guess, on the merit-based approach on the project, sometimes a project may not be able to be elevated to a position high enough to start receiving consideration as to whether or not it has merit if it doesn't have technical expertise on the ground while it's developing that project, would be my concern.
And Mr. Chair, I agree with you. When I was talking about merit-based approach, in part I was talking also about merit-based approach looking toward moving funds to organizations that are performing and producing as much as moving funds toward projects that are actually accomplishing something. And I think that that's the capacity to have elements of a merit-based approach work both for project development and for providing capacity support to local groups. And one of the things we're working very hard on with watershed councils is to move us to a merit-based approach that rewards performance and work plans and moves over time toward making sure that the dollars are flowing to organizations that are really producing the projects that are getting on the ground. And I think that that's something that we should just be continuing to discuss, all of us, about how to do that better. I'm certainly looking for more ideas on how to do that better myself.
Representative Kurtz.
Yeah, there's a couple sides to this, Mr. Chair, and one being, I don't think anybody would deny that we have a need in every county in the state for a considerable amount of watershed activities, because amazingly enough, every county has water in it. Part of the problem is that historically, the winners win and the losers lose. We get into a situation here where we're going to put, if it's just based on those who can write good grants, are going to get the projects, and they're going to get the technical expertise, and that tends to perpetuate. And I think we can see historically that more money goes in certain areas than others, and clearly there's more need in certain areas than others. But those who are fully functional usually reap the whirlwind in this case. And if you look historically at soil districts, what you will find is that those soil districts that at some point in time were able to acquire enough resources to have the staff required, to do the outreach, to do the base level technical sort of work, are the ones that get the project funding. And at the same time, in my history of soil districts, there were some that, when we got into the displaced timber workers and displaced fishermen sort of programs, and suddenly there was money available, and we made money available to some of these organizations to where they could actually have staff, suddenly their work just exploded, and they were doing some incredible things. I guess I do have a problem with just parsing out technical assistance based on grants, because the sexiest things are going to get funding. And for example, if you're doing an entire watershed approach and you're doing things in the order that makes the most sense, some of the things you're going to do aren't going to appear all that wonderful and may not rise to the level of the things that other people are doing. So do you go to your sexy type of projects first to get the funding, even though it's not the order you should be doing them? I mean there's a, and you know this, I mean there's a lot of interplay in this whole thing, and one of the things that I think would be beneficial, and clearly if these positions are in soil districts, that doesn't mean that that's all they do is whatever the soil district wants, but clearly I think if there was some certainty at the local level that they were going to have the expertise, and that person with the expertise would have the time to develop the approach that needed to be taken in that watershed, that at the end of the day we might be able to have better results long term, rather than project by project. So all we're looking at is a 2-year window each time. But once again, Mr. Chair, I'd also say that this is an issue I think that Ways and Means Sub is going to look at as to the best places to put the resources that we have, and that was an attempt to give them another tool in the toolbox as they go through those deliberations.
Mr. Chair.
Wasn't really a question, but...
I know it wasn't, but I was looking to Jeff to see if he had a comment.
No, other than I think Representative Cruz and I have been doing this so long that we think watershed projects are sexy now. For that's a comment on how long both of us have been working in this arena. No, I don't have any particular.
We have some fairly competent and capable therapists and counselors running around that I would be glad to help, make some referrals for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Jeff, thanks for pointing that out. I didn't realize I had that problem. But
anyway. Representative Dean Pollard.
All right, this is going to be a tough one to follow. But, Jeff, I'm just trying to get clarification so I can understand, make sure that I'm understanding this bill correctly. So currently, the money that is funneled from OWEB goes directly to the Department of Agriculture, and is it the Department of Ag that decides how to allocate that $2.4 million, or is it OWEB?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, it's a revenue transfer of $2.4 million to the Department of Agriculture, who runs a grant program for districts distributing the money. And I'm sure if John McDonald testifies or Department of Ag later today, they can give you the best description of how that's done, but it's done on an equal per county basis, my understanding is. So it's divided between the counties, and then depending on how many districts there are in the county, it's divided again, I believe. OWEB has a $2.4 million pot of money from the same operational Measure 66 money. We run a grant program to watershed councils that is on a two-year cycle. Grants come in, and it's a competitive grant program that we're moving for a more merit-based approach, but we review the projects, and there's different allocations of money depending on the activities, the work plan of the council, and so forth that comes in the door and the expectations for the next couple of years.
Follow up, sir? And I see that Mr. McDonald is here, and I don't know if he's planning to testify in this bill, but so you don't tell the Department of Ag how to spend that $2.4 million. That's their decision on how to allocate that. Because the question is, I'm just wondering if something like this would be better directed to the Department of Agriculture. This is more of a rhetorical question. Mm-hmm. But as far as making sure that the money is allocated. I mean, I'm trying to figure out if this is something that for OWEB to deal with, or we should have the Department of Ag looking at the process of how they allocate the funds to the districts.
And Representative Dingfelder, I think that is clearly the purview of the Department of Agriculture and the work between the districts and the Department of Agriculture. I pointed it out this morning only because this bill, if it were passed in its current form, would say one position in each county for staffing of soil and water conservation districts, and that drives a set fiscal impact. And that is a different mechanism for delivery than the establishment of the alternative that I brought up, which I'm not advocating for, but it's mm-hmm. it's the clear policy choice, and it's the difference between the 2.4 that OWEB is administering and the 2.4 that is being administered currently.
Okay. Thank you.
Please stay sharper.
Thank you. Mr. Huntington, would you say that these grants are given out based solely on who hires the best wordsmith, or would you say that that's not the only criteria you go by? Is it how well the grant is written?
Chair Jimson, Representative Schaffler, no, and I think that Representative Cruz raises a very good point. We have to consciously be very careful to make sure that funds don't flow to the best grant writer, and that we provide the opportunity to lift those that are in important areas of the state that have a lot of work that needs to be done but don't quite have the capacity to grab hold of it quite as well as other groups do, and lift them up so they can function better. And that is an element that we work on with councils. We try to bring up the councils that need better performance, but reward those that are performing. And that is a function of not just how well you write a grant, but what was your work plan for the last 2 years? What's your work plan for the next 2 years? Did you get what you said that you were going to do the last time done? Mm-hmm. And are you realistic in what you're saying you're going to go forward toward doing? And I know that With councils, that's something that we are beginning to emphasize quite a bit in our grant review process as we move toward a more merit-based approach. And I know that Mr. McDonald probably talked to you a lot about it, but I know the districts are working very hard on work plan development and establishing specific tasks that they want to take on, and so the foundation's laid there in a very parallel way. But it's not just reward the best grant writing.
Mr. Huntington, in light of my commitment to get you to your other meeting, I'm going to excuse you from the from this meeting. Even if some people have other questions, they can get to us, and we'll get to you on those.
And I'll be happy to visit the people individually if they'd like.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I was going to ask Mr. Huntington for a list of the sexy projects, but if you want to cast it at something else, that's fine, too.
I think you have a member of the committee that you might...
sidebar.
You
know.
John, would you mind... the chair is taking some exceptional, I think, liberty with this because Mr. McDonald was not signed up to testify on this bill, and I'm not even sure how familiar he is with the bill. So, but if you could respond to Representative Dingfelder's question, and if you didn't, if she needs to restate that, I'd be happy to have her do that.
I'll be happy to do what I can.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, did you hear what I had asked Jeff about the allocation of the basically, I asked him about how the Department of Ag allocates the $2.4 million that's passed through from OWEB to Department of Ag down to the districts. And is that a set formula? Is it just a set amount that's divided among is it the 36 districts?
There are
36. Can I say how many districts are there total?
Your name and
Representative Dingfelder and Chair Jensen. There are 45 districts.
Thank you.
There are 36 counties. The distribution of the $2.4 million is based upon counties. Okay. So what you have is approximately, I believe the last time, it turned out to be 34,400 that went to each county. Now, what that means is when you get down to these six counties that have two different districts, they split that, so they're getting 17-something. And then the one county that has four districts splits it four ways.
Which is Baker County.
In Baker County, so they're getting eight or something for each one of those. The decision is made at the recommendation of the Soil Water Conservation Commission. So the funding formula is decided by the commission and recommended to the department.
And could I have your name for the record, too, John?
I'm sorry. John McDonald, Association of Conservation Districts.
Thank you.
Thanks, John, for that clarification.
Thank you. If you have anything else you want to say or testimony you'd like to make on this bill, please feel free to do so, but I wanted Representative Dingfelder's question answered.
Well, let me just say that there's the ongoing concern that all of us have about the funding of districts, and that is it's like most of the organizations around here, it is almost entirely based upon competitive grants. There are three that have now a permanent tax rate in Polk, Yamhill, and Marion. If I had my druthers, that would be the way we would go for all districts. But, of course, that's a local decision. It's put in the law that, it has to be that way. It's been that way since 39. Why districts haven't been more aggressive about doing it between 39 and now, I don't know. But it hasn't happened that way. The difficulty with the 2.4 coming to the districts is because the way in which the money is structured, it is not structured for positions. Some other grants, including watershed council support grants and so forth, are designed to say we're going to fund a coordinator position or something. We don't fund a position. We have watershed tech people, but you're getting by county the way it's distributed, either 30% of a position, money to support a position, or 70%. Except in Baker, you're getting less than that, but they pull it all together, so it turns out to be an individual. The ability to maintain qualified individuals who go through the certification training, who are credentialed to be able to do things, who have gone the training to be able to get job approval authority, and all those things they have to have to be able to do certain practices on the ground. You know, of course, keeping those people is one of our major dilemmas because of the turnover. It puts us in a bind because we have to have multiple funding sources to be able to build enough work to have enough personnel costs that we can apply to at least build a position. Because you don't get 75% technicians out there. You don't get 50% half-time technicians that are going to do work for you. The flip side of that also is that because we are funded almost exclusively, and definitely with the state money, exclusively for particular services, it's where do we get our administration? So if you've got four or five people and you've gone out and been aggressive and successful in getting grants, and you really need somebody who's almost a manager, we don't have any funds to pull in a manager unless we, again, piece together, you know, a portion of a number of grants and so forth to aggregate enough money to be able to support a position. And it's that kind of game we play all the time, and it's one that just plain doesn't help people feel comfortable. We don't build a lot of career ladders. And that's kind of the dilemma. So, you know, if we could get some, you know, regular kinds of things that allows us to do good administration and good, you know, record keeping and good financial management and stuff, and still be able to do the technical work, you know, to be able to assist landowners. And I was just in a meeting yesterday, and NRCS and FSA leapt up and said, you know what we're putting out on the state right now is $225 million coming through USDA. And by the way, the responsibility of districts to continue to have that money flow, which is going to increase, your responsibilities are going to get bigger. You have more responsibilities about approving grants, about defining, about targeting where the money goes, about coming up with cost share levels and so forth. So we're even feeling right now, how are we going to handle what SB 1010 is asking and not leave a lot of money on the table because we can't leverage the stuff that's already there saying, if you do this, you get it. If you don't, you don't. So anyway, that's my whining for the morning, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any questions for Mr. McDonald? Thank you very much. I'm sorry to have...
I apologize for being late. That slow farm truck coming over to Hayden was just an annoyance.
The darn old trucks at farmers.
I just hate that, don't you?
Yeah. Thank you. Seeing no further, we do have further. I have a written testimony from Les Helgeson, Native Fish Society, that you have in front of me, in front of you, I think. Will be in front of you, that we wish to add to the record. Les could not be here this morning, but he did want his testimony added to the record. So this will become part of your reading assignment for the next 24 hours. You'll be quizzed on it next Tuesday.
Just one more thing, because sure. John did bring up something that I think is incredibly relevant, and that is the money coming to the state in the new farm bill and our ability to access that and utilize it properly. Clearly, we aren't going to be able to put any more state money into habitat work. But that 200 plus million that the feds are putting on the table should look fairly attractive to us.
Yes. Go ahead.
Can I also make one comment? And actually, John McDonald brought this up in his testimony. One thing just for the committee that I'd like to clarify, having worked both for Watershed Council and Soil and Water Conservation District, I think I'm pretty well aware of the financial constraints on both programs. But one thing is, as John mentioned, that Soil and Water Conservation Districts do have the ability to pass a local tax, which the Watershed Councils do not. So they pretty much rely on the state, at least for their seed money, where the districts, because they are an arm of government, have the ability to levy a tax if it's passed in their county. And so that is an option that they do have, which John pointed out, three of the counties currently have, and certainly hope that maybe they can look at that as additional funding as well.
I need to respond, I think, to that representing Dingfelder. I appreciate and understand that. There's no question on our part about the importance of the issues that we're dealing with here, and even in relationship to Representative Cruz's well-taken point about getting extra money, we are hardly in a position to chastise the counties for their having failed to do this in the past, and I said I'm not sure meritorious as the request would be around the state whether they would have the ability to get those tax levies through on a vote, sort of thing. So,
Mr. Chair,
I think that's something that we need to consider as we look at this bill.
And for the record, I wasn't advocating or chastising the counties. I'm just stating that that is an option that they have that the watershed councils don't have because they are an arm of the government.
Yes, I understand that. Yeah. I understand.
So it was more for clarification because I'm not sure that everyone.
Well, and Mr. Chair, for clarification, most districts have looked at that option, and I guess I would say just because you have an option, if your chances of exercising the option are slim and none, it's really not an option. And I would say, that, for example, in my county, if the cell district went out for tax levy, you know, people in southern and eastern Oregon aren't necessarily interested in anything that has tax associated with it.
That only is from Portland, right?
Well, actually, I think there's several other counties. Multnomah County does not have one. I know that there's several rural counties that do.
We better work on Multnomah County. We've discussed this, for a public hearing on the committee more than we should have, and to avoid further breaching any sort of protocol, the chair is going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2515 for the present time. We will be back with this bill at a later date. So, we will open a work session on House Bill 2210, and what do we need to do on the FB?
There's no revenue, there's no, so it's just passing the floor.
Okay. I'll just read it again. House Bill 2210 increases the amount a person contracting for or offering services to contract for construction, alteration, abandonment, or conversion of wells must have in surety bond or irrevocable letter of credit. Increases amount applicant for permit to construct, alter, abandon, or convert well must have in bond or irrevocable letter of credit. This bill basically raises the bonding fees necessary for well construction for landowners and well services with groundwater general contractors. It was heard last week, and we're here to vote this bill to the floor if you so choose to do so. There is no physical or revenue on it.
Mr. Barnes.
Mr. Chair, okay. You ready for a motion?
I am ready for a motion.
Mr. Chair, I suggest that we move House Bill 2210 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. I not only suggest it, I move it.
thank you very much, Representative Tomei. Representative Tomei moves House Bill 2210 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Flores.
Just having made inquiry earlier and referring to my notes that this is revenue neutral and that the bond increase goes directly to the insurance company makes me feel very good about the minimal increase that on the bond expense. So,
thank you.
I'm ready to vote aye.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Call the roll, please.
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Cruz.
Aye.
Representative Shaw.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Dingfelder.
Aye.
Representative Shaw.
Excuse.
Chair Jensen.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2210 be placed on the consent calendar.
Representative Cruz moves House Bill 2210 be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Objection, of course, would mean that somebody wants to carry it. So,
you're right.
House Bill 2210 has been moved to the floor and will be on the consent calendar. So we'll close the work session on 2210 and open a public hearing on 2376. And what are we looking to do with this?
2376 is a bill that eliminates or it transfers all of the duties of OLEB to Department of Ag and Department of Fish and Wildlife. And we just, this meeting, this hearing was just open to add four sets of minutes to the record. Would you like me to tell you who they are?
Sure. Four sets of, not minutes.
Not minutes, but testimony, excuse me.
Yes, please, if you would.
Testimony from the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. Testimony from the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts, testimony by Northwest Sports Fishing Industry Association, and testimony from the Native Fish Society.
Okay. That testimony will be added to the to the record for House Bill 2376. And you all are in the process right now of getting a copy of that testimony. Again, this will be on the quiz Tuesday for your having read. Was there anyone here who saw this public hearing on 2376 and came with the intention of testifying? Okay, I asked that question because if there was, we would certainly want to extend the invitation to you to come forward. Okay. You certainly may. State your name for the record, please.
My name is Sharon Livingston. I reside in Long Creek, Oregon, Grant County. I did not realize you were having testimony today. I'm here for another meeting, and I just happened to drop in. I appreciate very much if you, sir, are willing to listen to what I have to say, and I'll make it very brief. I have no written testimony at this time.
That's nice.
I serve on a watershed council in a watershed basin, and I am here to recommend that the duties of OWEB be transferred to the Oregon Department of Agriculture, and then I would understand that they would be the umbrella and the oversight for soil and water conservation districts, and that the soil and water conservation districts then would administer. One of my prime reasons is this. I believe that the processes being carried out are duplicative. I believe that soil and water conservation people are elected by the people. In my research on watershed councils, they are operating very loosely organized, and I do have information at home that I could share with you, and I will direct a letter to this committee. Therefore, in the because of good fiscal responsibility, I believe that we could administer those funds through Soil and Water Conservation District, do it very well, and remove one more agency. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Ms. Livingston. Does anyone have any questions? Ms. Livingston? Thank you very much, and I'm glad that you raised your hand and volunteered to come forward. Okay, at that point, we will then close the public hearing on House Bill 2376 for today, and we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2512. And Mr. Test, would you...
House Bill 2512 directs the Water Resources Department to complete survey of existing well networks and make results available to the public. declares an emergency and would be effective upon passage.
Thank you. And do we have people to testify on this? I understand. I believe you're here for that purpose, Adam. Why don't you come up? Go ahead when you're ready.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Adam Sussman. I'm the legislative coordinator with the Department of Water Resources, and we're glad to be here this morning to take this opportunity to show you some of the great stuff that Water Resources Department has done, particularly with respect to House Bill 2512. This bill, House Bill 2512, is a measure that directs the department to survey its existing state observation well network and make that information available to the public both in written and electronic form, specifically utilizing the World Wide Web. And the survey required by the bills to be completed by June 30th of 2004. And as I say, the department supports the objectives of this bill. However, the task contemplated by the bill has been accomplished, and the information that we've compiled is, in fact, now on our website. And that's why I brought Carl Wozniak from the department with me. And with the chair's indulgence, in a couple minutes, we'll give a brief presentation about how that data can be displayed. The accomplishment that the department made was made within existing budget resources, whereas the bill, if passed, would in fact have a new fiscal impact on the department. And I'll get back to that in a moment and explain why. Now, in past conversations with this committee, we've talked about how Oregon streams are fully appropriated to existing water users. And as a result of that, more and more people are turning to groundwater as an alternative source of water. And we can't overemphasize the need for sound information for the proper management of the state's groundwater resource. And with that increased information, we can effectively manage that resource by identifying sources of groundwater for new water supply for economic development, and at the same time protect existing groundwater users from overappropriation. The state's observation well network does provide a source of long-term data on groundwater, and this network currently includes approximately 350 actively monitored wells all around the state. And most of these observation wells have records that go back at least 40 years. And for the most part, department staff measure those wells on a quarterly basis. Over the years, that information that was collected was put into a central database in the department Salem office. And as I said earlier, these data are now available over the internet, and Carl will show you that in just a minute. We do have over 700 wells that have been in this observation well network. However, over the years, we've discontinued a number of those wells for a number of reasons. The well was permanently abandoned. We didn't have access to the well anymore. Landowners decided that they didn't want the department to continue monitoring the well. The information was redundant or was not reliable. And so we've scaled back to, again, about 350 wells. Now, in addition to this long-term observation well network, the department monitors lots of other wells that are not part of that network. These measurements are made mostly to support efforts related to groundwater monitoring in areas of concern and as part of ongoing projects to study the groundwater resource. Currently, the department is monitoring over 600 wells in the state on at least an annual basis. So that would include the 350 observation wells as well. The database that we're going to show you contains these 600 wells and the data for them, as well as historic data for another 1,400 wells. So it's a pretty extensive database. Again, this bill, House Bill 2512, is consistent with a department initiative to gather all that information and make it available to the public. And despite limited funding for that effort, over the last 4 or 5 years, we've worked slowly and diligently and now have that information compiled and available to the public. Again, given the department's accomplishments, it appears that the intent of House Bill 2512 has been accomplished under existing budget and statutory authority. We plan to continue upgrading the database and to make improvements as we move on. As I mentioned earlier, if adopted in its current form, House Bill 2512 would have a new fiscal impact on the department in that it requires us to maintain the current ownership information of the wells. And as you can imagine, tracking the continual changes in property ownership throughout the state for these wells would represent a significant workload for the department and would likely not have much bearing on the data itself. And with that, if there's not questions, with the chair's indulgence, I'd like to give Carl an opportunity to...
Representative Schaffer.
Yes. Thank you.
Hi. What was the motivation for compiling all this data? Was it environmental, economical, some other reason? And how frequently do folks refer to it? And for what reasons, if you have any idea? Please.
Hi. Well, I mean, for the record, my name is Carl Wozniak. I'm a groundwater hydrologist with the Department of Water Resources. Basically, we had two goals for compiling this data. Internally, we need to make decisions and provide information to our administration regarding the health of groundwater throughout the state. And so, to the degree that this data is compiled centrally and made accessible to departmental staff, it makes it a lot more easy to do that in an efficient manner, and it also allows us to make it available to folks on the outside. We get fairly routine requests from consultants, drillers, members of university staff for our data, and typically then those filter down to specific people working in area. They have to provide that data, you know, in those specific instances. Now we can refer these folks to our web page and they can get it themselves.
Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm just going to give you a brief demonstration of how we've made our data accessible on the web, and I want to emphasize that we've done this with a threefold approach. The concept here was to provide some clickable maps so that folks can go in, users could go in and display graphs of water levels over time for individual wells to make it easy to get access to this information. Secondly, we provide downloadable data files in standard formats for individual wells and for all of our data. So if someone wants to get the entire data set, they can pull it down and put it on their computer and do what they need to with it. And then thirdly, we wanted to provide direct links to other groundwater data that's available on the web via other organizations such as the U.S. Geological Survey. This is our departmental web page. We have a link to a groundwater page here. And then right at the top of the page, we have a new page, relatively new page, which allows us to access well water level data and hydrographs. These are graphs of water level over time. One can look at this based on a map theme. This brings up some standard software that we have that allows folks to query our water right database, but we've added the capability of doing observation well data. One has to select a basin. In this case, I'll choose to look at the Willamette Basin. One can also search on the basis of township range section. In this case, this brings up a map, the western portion of the state centered on the Willamette Basin, and we can activate the observation well layer. We can choose to zoom in on a given area with the zoom tool and focus in on an area up here in the vicinity of Woodburn. One can click on the information tool for the observation wells here and decide to look at a particular instance of a well This will bring up a record here, which allows one then to plot a hydrograph of that given well. And if we bring out the screen here, what we see here, this is a plot of water levels over time for this particular well. This is about a 40-year period of record with some gaps for this particular well. We have the well location on the top here in terms of its legal description. There's a unique identifier here which ties it back to our well log database, our online database I'll get back to in a minute. There's a specific state observation well number. Generally, we have the depth in there. It's not in there for this well. We have depth of water below land surface on the left side and then time on the bottom here. And you can see the seasonal fluctuations in water level over time for this particular well as water levels are up in the winter when we have rain and then down in the summertime. One can also go to the bottom of each of these hydrographs and pull up a table which has all of the data for that particular well. The top of this is just a information that explains what this data is, well location, the state well log ID number, the water level, the date, where the information came from. In this case, most of this data came from Water Resource Department, but we do incorporate data from other agencies, particularly the U.S. Geological Survey. One can download this data into a text file, copy it into a spreadsheet, make your own graph, incorporate it with other data, etc. So for a particular well, one can go in and get this information. One can also directly go back here and get information about the well itself to see what aquifer the well is producing from, to look at the description of the driller's report. This is a link via that well ID back to our online well log database. It takes us directly to the well log of interest. One can click on that and bring up the well log for the well and look at the description of materials via the driller. In this case, this is a well that penetrates sands and gravels in the vicinity of Woodburn. It's an unused well via the city of Woodburn. One can see where the well is completed and use this to interpret the water level data that's provided for the well. That's one method for getting at this data. Briefly, on the map here, we differentiate between the various wells by color. The blue wells are active wells that are actively being monitored. The reds are wells for which we have historic data. The stars represent state observation wells that are measured at least quarterly, and then the squares represent project wells that are measured periodically for other purposes. One can display this data in conjunction with other information. In particular, with respect to water right data, if one wants to look at where the irrigated land is, one can bring up our places of use on here, which shows the irrigated acres within the valley. To do that, one just needs to activate that layer and refresh the map, and it will show all the acreages that are currently being irrigated in the vicinity of interest here. Well, theoretically, at any rate, that will happen. One can zoom in, of course, to smaller levels and get very detailed information. There we go. We're getting a little closer there. One can zoom in to very specific localities within here. For example, the lighter green shows areas that are irrigated with surface water. The darker green areas irrigated with groundwater. One can bring up information regarding those water rights. I won't go into that. But if one has some interest in a specific area here, this shows the topographic maps in the background, and we have an observation well right in the vicinity. If a landowner or a consultant doing work out in the area for a variety of reasons is interested in that data, again, they can pull up data on that particular well and bring up the graph of water levels over time and get an idea of what the health of the system is in a particular area. And again, we show both historic data, and there's data for about 1,500 wells actively online here. One can also, if one knows something about the area in general and knows something about the particular wells there, one can go directly to a list of wells, of these wells that have graphs associated with them, and they're listed alphabetically by their well log ID. One can scroll down and bring up any particular well on the list and just skip the map component if that's, you know, desirable from the user's perspective. Other thing that we've done here in terms of providing access to the data, that's our clickable map interface, is we've provided text files of all of our data. For example, You can download any of these files. There's a text file here which has all of our water level data in it. It doesn't look pretty on the screen, but it's got 95,000 records in a standard format, 95,000 water level records. Consultant, driller, whatever, can download this data and put it in their own database very quickly and manipulate that data in a manner which is useful to them. The same for information on the digital locations of the wells. We provide that data in a series of files here that people can download, and this is explained in a variety of ways within a text file which explains the data structure. Thirdly, our third approach here has been to provide links to other water level data within the state of Oregon. Right now, we're providing links to U.S. Geological Survey studies, recent studies, or current studies. And we have, for example, here information on an ongoing study in the Klamath Basin. You can go directly to their homepage and learn information about that project, or you can go directly to the water level data. We wanted to provide fairly direct access to water level data. The U.S. Geological Survey, for example, maintains some automatic water level recording devices in wells in the basin. By clicking on a link here, it brings up a map of the basin. They use the same scheme that we do. Active site is blue, inactive is red. We're using the same software. As a matter of fact, they provide us the software for producing these graphs. One can click on one of these sites, bring up water level data via the same mechanism, so we have a consistent interface. One can click down here and bring up the data again for these wells. And so even though we're not offering that data directly on our site via our database, we're providing direct links to these other sites. So that's, I guess that's about the gist of my presentation. I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Just a statement, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I just find this fascinating.
Thank you, Representative Tomei.
Mr. Chair, could I ask Representative Tomei a question?
Certainly.
Would this fall under the category of sexy? That's the question.
almost.
In light of the fact that the department has, in essence, I think what the bill was after, and the fact that if we were to pass out the bill, there would be a rather complicated and costly new property ownership, as Adam has pointed out, we probably will conclude with this bill that it has a somewhat limited but perhaps valuable relating clause that might be available at another time. But we went beyond where we might have envisioned that this was going with this last presentation. And at least for some of you, we have discovered something that that you can do if, you know, in the wee hours of the morning when you're suffering from insomnia, go to your computer, click on the Water Resource Department's homepage, and follow it through. Pretty self-explanatory, I think. And you can just have all sorts of fun looking for water wells around the state.
Mr. Chair?
Yes?
I just want to say something too, please.
Sure.
That is a comprehensive database there, and when people want to know what we're doing with their money and with a good income out of it, that's a good place to point to. That was very, I was very impressed by that as well. Thank you.
I think it was very, all kind of joking aside, I think it was very worthwhile for us on this committee to see this presentation and to hear it, thank you very much for your time. And Representative Soffler is certainly correct. This is very extensive and I assume a relatively costly database to ultimately put together for the department. So, and this time we then are going to close the public hearing on 2512 since I didn't have anyone else signed up to testify on it.
Nor should you.
And we will open the public hearing on 2551.
House Bill 2551 allows Water Resources Department to enter into agreements setting fees for purpose of enabling the department to provide faster or more complete services. Specifies purpose to which fees paid under agreement might be applied. Directs Water Resources Department to review their responsibilities of the department to identify services appropriate for completion by private parties.
Okay, with three people signed up to testify on this, Christina McNitt and Anita Link.
Good morning, Good morning, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, my name is Christina McNitt, and I'm representing the Oregon Water Resources Congress. And with me is a face that I think is becoming familiar to you in the back of the room, and I finally have an opportunity to introduce her to you, and her name is Anita Winkler. She's new to you as the Executive Director at the Oregon Water Resources Congress. She's been there for about a year, has a background in local government, and has a law degree. So she's been very beneficial to me personally, and helpful in putting together some of these issues. I think I'm going to... Mm-hmm.
Would you please make sure that Anita knows that we won't hold the law degree against her.
Well,
Mr. Chair, I debated about sharing that, but I thought full disclosure.
Mr. Chair, we'll reserve judgment.
We'll reserve judgment as St. Cruz has indicated.
We were sitting in the back of the room kind of dismayed that we had to follow the last bill, and I'll tell you up front that as proud as we are of House Bill 2551, it is nothing near as exciting as what you just saw. But maybe you'll understand why House Bill 2551 might turn out to be an important tool for the Water Resources Department, because none of their issues are simple, including issues related to irrigation districts and water transfers. What you saw was groundwater issues, but they have a whole other layer of complexity with other types of water users, which our association represents. Representative Susan Morgan introduced House Bill 2551 at our request, and the purpose of House Bill 2551 is to establish a statutory ability for the department to enter into voluntary contractual agreements with any party, a third party, for the purpose of expediting or enhancing the department's regulatory processes. The agreement would allow the department to hire additional staff or to contract for these types of services. Under House Bill 2551, the department would be able to utilize this tool to provide only the services that are already within their existing authorities. Some of these tasks would likely include water right permit applications, extensions, amendments, and final proof surveys, water right exchanges and transfers, and water management and conservation plans that are required by rule by the department. Any statutory timelines associated with these tasks would not be modified under this process. House Bill 2551 is not meant to replace fees or disrupt or delay the department's current management of their base work. House Bill 2551 is meant to simply establish a receipts authority so that interested parties have the option of establishing, by contract, an additional transaction processing pipeline through the department. House Bill 2551 would require the applicant to enter into an agreement with the department that would cover all the costs of that associated activity, and House Bill 2551 does not request or require any support of general fund dollars. I hope the committee would seriously consider this legislation as a potential solution or an additional tool to some of the challenges facing the department and its customer base as it faces increasing workloads and diminishing resources. The Congress has had several discussions with interested parties, including the League of Cities and the City of Portland and special districts and the department, and we have some conceptual amendments that we're ready to present to the committee. They're not necessarily substantive, but they make all the parties feel a little bit more comfortable about how this would work in actuality. If you would like, I can walk through those at this time, or we could just work with committee staff and have them drafted for a future work session.
Outline the problems and the solutions.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if you look at the bill as it's printed in front of you, under Section 2, sub 3, we would just replace that portion so that, and this is on the second page of my testimony, so that it would read, the department may not alter or establish processing priorities or schedules for a particular service provided by the department in order to compel a person to enter into an agreement under this section. Nothing under this section prevents the department from altering its internal operating procedures based on overall needs of the department. I'll let the department speak to that, but that was language we basically put together so they had a higher comfort level, so people know this is a voluntary opportunity, so that the department cannot compel any type of user or third party to enter into this type of agreement, and also so the department can manage its workload to the best of its ability. Also in Section 2, Sub 5, we amend the sentence that starts with the department shall review the responsibilities of the department to identify services provided by the department that are appropriate for the department to perform using the provisions under this section. We just noticed that as we read that, it basically said that it could do reviews to see what sort of agreements it could enter into, rather than saying it would make a review and then implement those programs. So we just thought that language was a little tighter. Again, under Section 2, we'd modify the Sub 6. The second sentence starts, such monies are continuously appropriated to the department for the purpose of reviewing department responsibilities for determining those services for which the authority provided in this section may be used and for fulfilling the individual agreements entered into pursuant to this section. So similar language.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Kirk. Yeah. Let's see if I can put this in plain English and see if I'm right. With this, the department would probably have a list of people in the private sector that they considered to be qualified. And so I apply for a water right, and I would contact one of these people to prove up the water right, and the department would take that, and they would pay that person for that proof.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, that's pretty much what we're trying to get to. Currently in Oregon, the Department of Environmental Quality has this ability right now, and so we're trying to mirror that statute for the Water Resources Department. So you can either come together as a group of people and aggregate a project. For example, we have some experience doing that. We had 10 irrigation districts work with the Department of Environmental Quality to get permits, NPDES permits, to apply some aquatic herbicides, and they managed to work with the department and satisfy the department and meet those criteria in a time frame that without being able to step outside and pay them more money so the department could contract with someone else. They never could have accomplished that with their existing workload. So this bill, House Bill 2551, would set up the same authority in the Water Resources Department for people to come together either individually or as groups with specific tasks, and the department and that third party would sit down and enter into an agreement about how much that task would cost, what type of person would be contracted. Another challenge I think that's facing the department is that they have a lot of expertise invested in some pretty invaluable employees, in my view at least, who continually threaten to retire. And I think that this would give the department the ability maybe to contract with those types of experts too as they're leaving the department in the future.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. I'm not necessarily opposed to this, but I do have one issue with it. I'm just an average working guy, and I go in and I ask for some, help with my water issues, and I'm put in a certain queue where my case comes up. And the next week, somebody comes in with all kinds of money, and they go right to the front of the line. That kind of bothers me. Can you address that, please?
Yes. Chair Jensen and Representative Schaffler, I'm glad you brought that up. We're trying very hard in this bill not to set up that example for that specific reason. What we're trying to do is set up parallel tracks of processing. So people who pay their fees and have entered into the regular department sort of queue for their processing, it does not disrupt that processing at all. They stay on that same time schedule. But in the event that that there's an unanticipated workload or some special concern like the NPDES permits that we experienced last summer, it allows the department and the individual users, this may not be the answer for everybody, but it at least is an additional tool for the department and the third parties to step forward and start a parallel processing line that will not serve at the detriment of other people who are already in the process.
Thank you. Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Christina. A couple of questions. I have sort of a similar concern about setting up a two-tiered approach. And I have two questions. One is, do you think if we raise the fees, and we know the Water Resources Department has a fee bill in, that that would help improve service for all customers?
Maybe you ought to save that question for Adam. He'll be coming up.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, I think you may remember we testified about 2 weeks ago in support of the department's process of looking at increasing their fees, and we're working with our members to that end as well. I mean, all of this stuff costs money, and in the end, our patrons are farmers, and they have to pay those fees. I mean, it reflects in their district operation and management assessments, and we take these things very seriously, including this bill. We don't see this as competing with the department's fee bill, and we intend to still sit down with them and work out that increased fee bill because, frankly, they have a backlog, and I think they'll testify to that in a few minutes about the increasing number of demands and their decreasing resources. And we just see this as an additional tool in addition to their fee increase to take care of some of the backlog.
Have a follow-up?
Follow-up.
Thank you. The other question I have is I'm just trying to figure out how this approach would work. Is there anything currently that precludes somebody from going out and hiring a consultant to provide that additional information to the department already? In other words, and you know, having worked for private engineering firms and worked on a lot of permitting projects, and part of the reason you would hire a consultant is to help provide that additional information that may be needed in a complicated permit, so to speak, or transfer. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm trying to figure out why we would want to provide the money through the department versus anybody can go out right now and hire a private consultant to provide that additional information that might expedite the permitting process or the transfer process.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dingfelder, again, thanks for asking that question. In many cases, for district purposes at least, they've already done that. They've gone forward and they've contracted for professional services to put together, say, for example, a conservation management plan. We have some districts that have had a plan submitted to the department for a number of years, and they've already made that investment to deliver that to the department. And I think the difference, and again, the department could probably answer this better than I, the difference is that this is a tool for the department to actually get through their processes and their permitting requirements. It's something that the private parties can't do. We're trying to assist the department to have their staff so they can get through the statutory requirements.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Christina? Not right now.
She's saving.
I'm still thinking.
Very good. Did you have additional testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm, for the record, Anita Winkler, Oregon Water Resources Congress. I'm simply here to answer questions if you stumped Christina.
Which is not easy.
Great. That was a terrible invitation.
Mr. Chair, I did think of a question.
We're all up to the challenge.
Christina, maybe we will be hearing testimony in a few minutes, but I'm wondering if you know of anybody who is opposed to this bill.
Mr. Chair and Representative Tomei, we are not aware of anyone opposed to this bill. In fact, I hesitate to do this, but Willie Tiffany from the League of Cities called me yesterday and told me that I could do this. He had intended to testify in favor of the bill, but another meeting came up, and he invited me to use his name and lend his support. And I believe we have special districts in the room, and they're interested in this as well. And again, I think the general consensus in the user community is just that it's an additional tool. It may not be the best tool for everybody, but it's an additional tool.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any anybody else want to try the stump, Christina?
Never. If we go off subject, we probably could. But.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. With this, we would call Adam Sussman with the Water Resource Department. I have an initial question, Mr. Sussman. I understand how you can handle this, more or less, as it's with consultants, but how do you guarantee the ways and means, the revenue source, if it's with FTE?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Put that in your discussion as you go on. It's fine.
Yeah. Adam Sussman, for the record, for the Water Resources Department. I'm going to try to address a couple things and then maybe launch into the formal testimony. And getting back to a point that Representative Schaffler raised about just the regular folks, so to speak, in the regular line, I think there's a side benefit that we didn't talk about, which is there's going to be a benefit to the folks in that regular line if there's a big, complicated application ahead of them that's pulled out and put in a parallel line that's being worked on by, say, a consultant or some additional staff. So I think there's going to be actually a side benefit as well. In terms of our testimony, I think Ms. McNitt has provided a good description of the bill. The department does support House Bill 2551 as proposed to be amended by the Water Resources Congress. And again, the one amendment that we were particularly interested in is just trying to clarify the language that the department can't compel somebody to enter into these kinds of agreements, that we can't hold their application or whatever process they have hostage, sort of knowing that, in fact, they could pay the full freight for this process. In terms of the chair's question, House Bill 2551 will have a fiscal impact on the department, but it's not related to any general fund support. In fact, it's only related to the receipt of revenue and the limitation that we might need to expend that revenue to either contract with consultants or hire additional temporary staff. We did put together fiscal impact related to that, and at this time it's unknown. It's a new authority to the department, and frankly we're not really sure how many people are going to engage in these kinds of agreements. The Department of Environmental Quality has had this authority for some 10 years, and they've only had folks interested in it about a dozen times. So in their case, it hasn't been something that has had a lot of interest. We believe in our case it will. As we described in our written testimony that you have now, and it's a theme that we keep bringing back to you over and over again, is that over the last decade, we've had a 30% increase in the number of water rights in the state. We're up to about 84,000. And in the same period of time, we've had a decrease in staff. And these trends have forced us to work smarter. I think we clearly demonstrated that just a few minutes ago, to build partnerships and to seek our stakeholder input constantly. But notwithstanding our best efforts to work smarter and have better technology, we have workload backlogs that are developing. We have over 700 water right transfers that are pending right now before the department. We have over 250 permit extensions in front of the department. We have over 5,500 final proof surveys that are awaiting review by the department, 30 water management and conservation plans waiting to be reviewed, and several allocations of conserved water awaiting to be reviewed. The department, under current budget and staffing, does everything it can to expedite high priority transactions, such as ones related to property transfers, economic development, or in-stream benefits. But the bottom line is that we cannot meet our customers' needs given our current staffing and budget. Now, as you know, and as Ms. McNitt described, the department is trying to address this on a number of fronts. One is through our fee bill, House Bill 2268, and we believe that increasing our statutory fees, as Representative Dingfelder was asking, will in fact help address some of these workload backlogs, particularly with water right transfers, where that bill would dedicate two staff to that job. This bill, House Bill 2251, does not replace the department's fee bill, but simply complements what we're trying to accomplish, which is trying to attack these workload backlogs to support economic development and environmental activities throughout the state. The demands on the department's services continues to grow, and even with our best efforts, we can't keep up, and we've got backlogs. This receipts authority would provide a new tool to address this problem, and it would allow the department and these water users to enter in an agreement so that we could continue to do more with fewer resources. I think an important point is that in addition to our activities that we're currently engaged in, this receipts authority, as Representative Schaffler was asking, will not distract us from the work that we're doing to attack the workloads under the folks in the normal line. And again, to the extent necessary, the department would use the fees in an agreement to hire temporary staff and outsource these services to the private sector. And as I said earlier, Representative Jensen, there is a fiscal impact on the department, but only to the extent that we need limitation for revenue and limitation to expend the money in our budget.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. Well, I'm completely satisfied that the regular normal lines will be taken care of. But will this help everybody wants to streamline the process these days. Will this help us not just in agricultural but in commercial and industrial and out in the rural areas, especially move things along for folks out there, and obviously in urban areas too, but could this be considered a streamlining bill?
Well, Chair Jensen, Representative Schaffler, I believe it is, again, part of our effort to streamline our process. When you talk about streamlining, of course, that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, but what it means to me is that you can get a permit application into the department and get an answer, whether it's yes or no, in a reasonable amount of time. And I believe this will be a step in the right direction for that, both for rural, urban, agricultural, industrial, commercial, whatever kinds of clients we have out there that have a need to move forward.
Thank you.
Other questions? Adam, I'm not sure. Maybe I missed it, but how are you going to pay for these extra FTEs if you don't get the fees?
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, again, I think the department, in a sense, would be acting as a pass-through. We had a customer that wanted a water management and conservation plan reviewed. We would enter an agreement with them, and we would simply pass their money through the department to a contractor. We might.
I understand the contractor. I understand how it works with a consultant. That's not. But I understood that there were possible addition of personnel in the department for this. Is this going to be only done by consultants?
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, what we may do in some cases, if there was as an example, a pooled group that wanted to take advantage of this contracting authority, they may decide to work with the department and instead of contracting out to a private consultant, may decide that the department can use that money to hire a additional temporary staff person that would be housed in the department for some, maybe say, 3-month work project, and they would work through that particular project. The other thing is that, as someone mentioned earlier, we would likely have a pool of retired staff. We would have a pool of, I guess you would call them, private consultants that would be qualified to conduct these various processing activities, and we would go to them to take care of the job.
We'll talk about this somewhere else, Adam, because I don't think you've gotten to my question yet on this. Temporary staff, I'm not sure why I'd want to work with, you know, if I was one of these people you're talking about as temporary staff, when I could easily work as a consultant and get some of the benefits of being a consultant out of this. Like I say, we'll visit this about this before we get to work session. So.
Okay. Yeah, Chair Jensen, I guess I want to make sure that I'm clear that there would not be any general fund support for this activity, that the person that the department entered into an agreement would be paying the full freight for the review of this process, and so it would not require any general fund support from the department.
Well, I understand what the intention is here, and I appreciate that. Like I say, let's not ride this horse any further right now. Any other questions? Thank you, Adam. I appreciate the testimony. We have a couple of others. Adam?
No, that's okay. We'll try.
They're not for Adam.
I just have the same lack of clarity, I guess, and so I would be interested in the sidebar discussions.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
We have the Farm Bureau, Gene Wilkinson, would like to weigh in on this issue. Good morning, Jean.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Jean Wilkinson with the Oregon Farm Bureau. I'm not nearly the expert on this bill that the Water Resources Congress or the department is, but we wanted to just quickly lend our support to this bill. We consider it to be a potentially valuable tool for some people. Probably the ordinary farmer or rancher with the ordinary business that they do at the department probably wouldn't use this process. The fees associated with complex projects to hire temporary or consulting folks might be quite high, but for those few farmers that have large projects and those irrigation districts that have projects that involve multiple landowners, multiple farmers, and perhaps multiple water rights, it could be a valuable tool, especially if it yanks them, you know, out of the long waiting line of ordinary applicants and puts them off to the side to work on their particular complexities. That could serve as was said, a benefit to all of us. So again, we wanted to lend our quick support, and I don't know if I'll be able to answer any questions, but I could try. Thank you.
We don't have do we have any questions? Notice that you are your own expert. You didn't bring reinforcement to field the question. So.
Right, I'm all by myself.
Okay.
Thank you
very much, Jean. And Amanda Rich with Western Advocates would like to testify briefly on this bill for the special districts. Good morning, Amanda.
Good morning, Chair Jensen, members of the committee. My name is Amanda Rich, and I'm here today representing the Special Districts Association of Oregon. We represent over 240 water districts in addition to our representation of some irrigation district members. And I wanted to just testify in support of this bill just very briefly. I'm kind of like Jean here. I'm not a real expert on this bill like Christina and Anita are, and I'm by myself, but so my depth of knowledge is not great, but I did just want to reiterate what Christina had said about special district support of this bill, although our water districts do not use the process quite as often as the irrigators and the farmers might. We do appreciate the opportunity to be able to use the process and have this tool in the department's tool belt if necessary. So again, just briefly wanted to say that we're here with a thumbs up.
Thank you very much, Amanda.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think probably about through the testimonies. Anyone else that would like to weigh in on this topic? I think one of the things, it's only one perhaps criticism that I might have. This probably should have been touted in this particular legislative session as an economic development bill, because the expediting of some of these things in some of these complicated and large projects would certainly be economic development. We would, and I'm familiar with in my district a number of projects that took years, literally, to bring to closure. When we were talking about the development of jobs and product to ship out of Oregon ports this certainly would be I think for us a good way to think about this bill as an economic development bill. We will look forward to the amendments as they come back to us. And Christina, will you get to Legislative Council and make sure that that process is initiated? Yes, and staff tells me and get it done ASAP. Do we have any other items here? That we
unless you want to ask if somebody came late.
Oh, yes. I must ask, is there anyone who came in late and expecting to testify on House Bill 2515, which for the sake of the Water Resource Department, we heard early, so or not the Water Resource Department, the OWEB, we heard early so Jeff Huntington could get to another meeting. No one here looking to testify on House Bill 2515? Yes, sir. Would you please? I'm going to close the public hearing on 2551 and reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2515. For the record.
Record Chair Jensen, members of the committee. My name is Les Helgeson. I'm here from Beaver, Oregon, and I'm a board member of the Native Fish Society. I'm also co-chair of the Fish and Wildlife Technical Subcommittee of the Nestucca-Nesquin Watershed Council. And the Native Fish Society, we cannot support this bill for a couple of reasons. Since its inception, at the time, I believe it was in 95 when we formed what was then GWEB, if I remember correctly. There's quite a tug of war between the Soil and Water Conservation Districts wanting that type of funding, and it was decided to form GWEB. And we're concerned that this bill, as it's written, it's really redirecting many of the responsibilities now that our watershed councils are implementing. In fact, in Tillamook County, where I'm from, we've got a regional, I believe it's countywide, council coordinator and so forth, and things are working pretty well. So, I don't know, in Section 2, Subsection 1, A through F, that's basically what we're doing already. I don't know why we would want the soil and water districts to effectively take this over. As I said, I'm a member of the Watershed Council Technical Committee. I actually was one of the founders of that entity. I work with then Representative Tim Josie, as well as the director of former director of our local soil and water district, and we have some concerns. Ultimately, that director resigned. I left the Watershed Council at the time as one of the board members because things got stifled. Essentially, several of the local district board members effectively took over the council and insisted on administrating all the funds and so forth that we applied for. We had agreed to form a non-profit separate entity so we wouldn't be perceived as a governmental agency, which to landowners is a big negative. But We waited, it was 3-4 years before we even got our nonprofit status. In the meantime, it seems the council was doing nothing. And the Soil and Water District was funding their positions essentially with the administrative percentages that they received from the grants we were applying for. And it wasn't until we gained our independence, if you will, that things started happening. We got projects on the ground. Trees were getting planted. Monitoring programs were getting implemented. We just established a new water quality monitoring lab through funds and so forth. So it's working real good as it is. And important point I'd like to underscore here is that I don't think the existing statute precludes OWEB from funding local water district positions. If that's appropriate, I believe they can do that. I'm not an attorney, but it appears that that could be done and has been done in some cases. So, if I'm wrong, then maybe we need to address that. But I think it's the local conditions that are different and Mr. Representative Jensen, Chair Jensen, your district is much different than where I live out on the coast. And to require all soil and water districts to be funded by OWEB and effectively take over the monitoring and implementation of the Oregon Plan, that seems a little extreme, and you're trying to put a one-size-fits-all template on us, and I think it would seriously impede the efforts of our councils. Thank you very much, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Elders?
Thank you
very much. With that, having nothing else on the agenda, we'll close the House Bill 2515 and stand adjourned.